You're listening to the Kern Cast, a World of Warcraft podcast with your host, Kern.
Hey there, my name is Kern. Welcome to episode 39 of the Kern Cast. Cannot believe that this podcast has gone on for, well, this long. And to those of you who have been listening since the beginning, I apologize. Anyway, thanks for listening. I appreciate it. With me today is a special guest, and no, it's not Magic, thankfully, and no, it's not my brother, who I guess some people thought it might be. No, this is in fact someone that I have never really spoken to before, at least not on Mumble or any sort of voice communication, but this is Hanzo from the Descendants of Draenor Guild, and from Twitter, and from WoW Lemmings, and of course he is the author of 8 Years in Azeroth, one of the best blogs I've had the privilege of reading. So I'm really thrilled to have him here. Hanzo, thank you so much for spending some time with me today.
You're very welcome, and I like how you started it off with an apology. So here's my fans, I apologize profusely for what I'm about to levy on you.
Hanzo and I have this in common. He and I are both Canadian.
That's right. The Great White North.
Although Hanzo now lives in the United States, I believe, correct?
Yes, correct.
So you're not getting all of this snow and ice and...
Yeah, so Denver, Colorado has been getting pretty much blanketed with snow the last couple of weeks. So, and here's what sucks. The part of Canada that I'm from is the warm part, which for many Americans think is there is no such thing.
Heck, I was going to say that.
There is. It's the West Coast. It's Vancouver Island. We get like a few flakes a year, and then it goes away. So
from Vancouver Island. Okay.
Yeah, I West Coast represent. So, but yeah, I'm dealing with it. I just, you know, stiff upper lip, serenity now. We're gonna power through this snow. We're going to power through it.
Okay, well, I'm glad to hear that you have resolved to get through the snow. I gotta say, it's actually starting to look a little bit like spring over here in Montreal. So, sorry to hear that you're buried by snow.
It's getting good. It's melting away. We're making through. Yeah,
good deal. So I wanted to ask you to help our listeners find out a little bit more about you, because I know that I was kind of clueless as to who you were until a couple of years ago. I'd actually heard of you prior to that. We'll get into that in a bit. But if you want to tell us a little bit about yourself, how you started playing WoW, that sort of thing.
How I started playing WoW. Here's the thing about starting to play WoW. So I got into the beta pretty early. So we're going back now to what? March, April of 04.
Wow.
I had already done a little bit of MMO stuff. I already started the EverQuest thing, started and finished it. I had a fellow gaming friend of mine encourage me to try that out, and it was just a complete wash. And I realized a lot of great memories came from that game, and a lot of people did enjoy it. I did not. It did not work out well for me. I came out of that experience going, what the hell did I just do with 4 months of my life? But, you know, in retrospect, I realized also that the situation was quite different. I wasn't in a guild. I didn't even really know what they were, or that this social thing really involved interacting with other people. I was just running around as the gnomish necromancer somewhere in EverQuest. I don't even remember what the worlds were called at that point. I think Kinos and Freeport and some things. I don't know. I don't even know what server I was on. But I did a little bit of that. I did a little bit of City of Heroes, dabbled in Horizons, but the MMO thing just wasn't doing it for me. I mean, I had traditionally come from originally console gaming, but had been a PC gamer for many years. You had the 286, had the 386, the 486, all of that, you know,
solid.
Playing Police Quest, Space Quest, you know,
excellent.
The old Sierra Online games, and meanwhile, of course, building up consoles, had a Sega Genesis, did the Sonic the Hedgehog thing, had a Super Nintendo, Street Fighter, a lot of fighting games. But, you know, and eventually it transitioned into a lot of first-person shooters, a lot of Doom, and then Quake, and then Counter-Strike, and then this is kind of where, you know, it led me, this group of players where we would do the LAN parties every now and again, and just whatever was popular at the time, whether it was Quake or, you know, a lot of Counter-Strike, a lot of Unreal Tournament, and it was through these people that I eventually was sort of introduced to you know, okay, it's late into the evening, we're kind of getting tired, we're done with the Counter-Strike and the Quake, let's fire up a quick game at Diablo. Who's in for some Warcraft 3? And I'm like, I haven't played Diablo yet, and I'm not into the RTS thing. I suck at it. I don't know what's going on half the time. I had a little bit of Command and Conquer, and those games just absolutely wrecked me. But, you know, the more they played Warcraft, the more I got pulled into the whole lore. And oh, there's actually quite a lot of crazy stuff going on here. I kind of follow along, and Warcraft 3 came out, and I was like, okay, I think I'm going to actually dive in this time. I'm going to make a concerted effort to see if I can climb the Battle.net ladder. I think I made it to level 11, which is probably an embarrassment. But by that point, I was a Blizzard fan. It was a done deal. So the World of Warcraft, it was, you know, that was something that was unavoidable. I mean, I was by that point already on the track. And I knew going in that an MMO, traditionally, they hadn't really done a great deal for me entertainment-wise, but I kind of felt like Blizzard would do something a little bit different. They would wrap it up. You know, they would kind of nail it where other game companies had sort of come close, but maybe perhaps missed the mark. So right. that is initially what led me into, okay, now I have a beta account, I'm in here, I'm playing around, what the hell's going on? What are these classes? What are we going to do? That's how that all started.
That is quite a story. Like, just the fact that, it always surprises me that people actually knew of the lore, because I was never really into the real-time strategy games myself. My brother was, but I wasn't, and I only got into WoW because of this article I read about the Zul'Gurub Blood Plague, and I thought that was badass, and I thought, oh, well, that's something I gotta try out. But like, you actually knew about the lore, you knew about all the characters.
Oh, so yeah.
That's really cool.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I was watching that stuff really closely, and you know, a lot of that kind of floated to the surface, especially during Warcraft 3, and then the expansion of that, the Frozen Throne. Like, they were really starting to kind of, okay, here's Thrall, and here's Arthas, and I see what the deal is with Uther, and with Jaina, and Antonidas, and I see where they're going with this, and here's Archimonde, and Magtherid, and all of that. They're clearly painting a picture, a broad picture. This is, you know, obviously going to be a very long, involved story. And then, of course, there were books and novels and, you know, all of these, a lot of the traditional pen and paper Dungeons and Dragons books. Of course, they're, you know, all the Blizzard people, they're huge hardcore nerds, have been for generations. You know, so, of course, all of this material is available, and I'm going to start diving into this. I like this. Let's see where this goes. And, you know, began to really understand it. To me, it seemed like they were kind of throwing the archetype on its side, right? Like, in my opinion, the protagonists of the story were primarily the Horde, you know, which is different, okay. Right? Think about it, right? A lot of the original story of Warcraft 3, you know, Medivh comes back, he's trying to speak to the Alliance, you got to be prepared, the Burning Legion is coming, he goes to the Alliance over and over and over, they just poo-poo him and go away, and this is all just a joke. Thrall, on the other hand, he's right in there, he only needs one warning and he's already going to defend his people. Kind of was like, wow, why are the orcs suddenly the good guys? This is very odd and unique and different. And that has really sort of played out for many, many years this way. I think that a lot of Alliance players, the ones that care at least, keep in mind, I think that a lot of people that play WoW don't really care too terribly about the story, and that's perfectly fine if they just want to do their fan art and they're doing their selfies and they're drawing another fucking Draenei. They love their Draenei. That's great. But I think for the ones that are really passionately dedicated, like from a hardcore nerd perspective, just like you would be a Harry Potter fan or a Star Wars fan or whatever, that have examined the storyline, to me it seems it's pretty obvious that the Horde, a good portion of it, has been the protagonist side of the story. And I always find it funny when some of like the hardcore raiders or the PvPers or the ones that have expressed that same passion cannot figure out why Why is there this thrall? Why? Oh my God. Once again, he's being folded into the stories. You know, Metzen's never going to kill off his Mary Sue. And I'm sitting back and thinking, this is the main character of the story. Would you have killed Luke Skywalker in the first episode, fourth episode, or Harry Potter in the first book? No, that it's his story. It's just, they've just kind of stopped short of actually saying that. They're kind of just leaving the pieces out there for you to put together. I've always just kind of found that interesting. For those that have paid attention to it, that's the way it seems to me, at least.
And you're obviously speaking from a sort of an educated perspective, given your history with you know, the real-time strategy games and the lore in general, whereas I didn't have that sort of background, right? Like, I knew it existed, so, like, the term Warcraft meant something to me. It didn't mean a whole lot, but I knew that there were orcs involved. I didn't know anything about the orcs. But when I was playing, when I started playing, I had no idea who Thrall was. I didn't know anything about, you know, the King of Stormwind or anything. But, you know, when I look at it from the perspective I have now, and I do look at the story and I go, oh man, why? Because I am unapologetically Alliance, by the way.
That's all right.
I look and I go, oh man, why is there more thrall in this? Why more horde crap? Ugh, yep. I can't stand the. But, like, to be fair, the Alliance doesn't really have anyone compelling. Like,
yeah, I know.
Do we have Varian? I mean, I don't like Varian.
Yeah,
I miss Bolvar, man.
I know. It seems like it's a little bit of a conspiracy. He could go either way, right? Tyrellian, we still don't really know what's going on there, but that's still an ace in the hole he could play. Tyrellian really is going to be, if he ever shows his face again, he could be the deciding factor in which way the story is going to go. But all of my money right now, until we see otherwise from Tyrellian, is on the Horde. In fact, I am also going to take it a step further and think that there's a compelling parallel that he is starting to paint, he being Metzen and the writing staff. A parallel is happening as we speak of the initial fall of the Titan Sargeras, which, of course, the final bad guy, you know, big bad guy of the universe. There's nobody evil above him. Well, there's also a parallel happening right now as we speak with Jaina. I mean, she has also had some serious, serious shit happen to her. And I've chatted with a number of people on Twitter about this, so I could see that get very opinionated. Very quickly, and that's perfect fine. I'm up for healthy debate. But she has had continual rejection, betrayal, sadness, loss. I think, in my opinion, it's unraveling her, right? And she's transformed. We're not talking about temporary, okay, a couple of people that you love died or betrayed you. You're kind of bitchy now for a short term. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about a character that was represented in Warcraft 3 as a genuinely kind, passionate individual to a person that is now trying to politically feed Varian the direction to, you know, start doing some backstabbing, start tearing down the Horde, start, like, move now, strike now while you have an opportunity to, like, bring this, you know, this enemy faction to its knees. Like, she's not just being a bitch. She's coming apart mentally, psychologically at the seams. And this is exactly what happened to Sargeras. Same sort of thing. You know, he was a good Titan. He fell from it after constantly dealing with shit, with the disappointment and failure of dealing with having to deal with the evil of the universe. So he unravels. He becomes a big bad guy. You know, my prediction is whenever Sargeras is eventually added to this game as a final raid boss and we're all up there beating on him, Jaina's going to be right there next to him in the whole fight. I guarantee it.
Oh, that's very interesting hypothesis.
Now, that is if you know, nothing plays out with Tyrellian, and it's hard to say again. That I still feel is the ace in the hole for the Alliance. They can pull him out somewhere. Perhaps things could start to look good for you guys and gals. I don't know. We'll see. Just my opinion.
See, yeah.
Just one man's opinion who has absolutely no insider information as to any of that. It's just how I'm reading it.
Well, I definitely appreciate hearing those thoughts. It's not often that I get to talk to someone who's you know, knowledgeable about lore and that sort of thing. So it's not to mention someone who's Horde. So
There is definitely a lot of alliance out there, especially on the social media. Boy, the Twitter stuff, you know, I even have to harp on some of my own guild members who just go to town on Twitter with their humans and their Draenei. Oh my God, the Draenei. It's just constant. It's nonstop. It's nonstop.
Not a fan
Everybody.
Of them?
I just, you know, the Draenei, they just, oh my God, the whole retcon thing. I just have not forgiven Chris Metzen for that. he's been very apologetic. Again, because if you know, if you've done the research and you go back and you see, you know, he's admitted this. This is no surprise. This is no secret. But, you know, he had to retcon the Draenei into the storyline in order to make the class aesthetically pleasing and a viable class for the Alliance at the Burning Crusade. But if you go back to the Frozen Throne, which is the expansion to Warcraft 3, the RTS, you'll know very quickly that the Draenei were never intended on being that way at all. Just ugly, you know, the withered away, horrific, those jagged teeth. There's no way Alliance players would ever go for that. There's no way. So, of course, the retcon.
Not.
Here comes the retcon, and then the pretty horns, and then the tails, and the hooves, and oh my God, Noxie's just drawing yet another piece of artwork, and okay, that's where we're at today. I get it. No, I got it.
I'm not a fan of them myself, to be honest, but it's more because I feel that the male models, or even the old ones, were just so clunky. They really just felt like they were clunky. And then the females, I wasn't a fan of the waggle, which a lot of people were, and I'm like, okay, that's just disturbing. So as soon as I had the opportunity, my sole single Draenei female turned into a male dwarf, just for the emotes, because I love hearing him say, brilliant.
Yep, exactly. Now, I will say this about the Draenei. More power to all those incredibly talented cosplayers that show up every year at BlizzCon in those costumes.
Yeah.
I mean, my phobia aside, they're some of the stuff that they have done over the years is brilliant. So there's at least that one redeeming part of the retcon. But yeah, as for the actual presence in the storyline and stuff, it's awful. I do like Urel, though. I think that was actually a really good move for them in Warlords of Draenor. I think that she's actually interesting. Right, the whole Joan of Arc style character is a good play, at least for the Alliance from that perspective. But traditionally, it's just not. There's not really been a lot there for me.
Given that I haven't done anything in Warlords on the Horde side, do you guys get Urel on your end, or is it someone else entirely, or what's the deal there?
Not so much. Not so much. I think that Urel is in. She's in. You know, spoiler alert. She's intending to take the place of Murat. And that's fine, you know. He had his use, right? And he's in, and now he's out, and so she's in. But they have a chance to kind of rebuild that character and the story and drive that narrative from her perspective rather than from his. But on our end, I mean, it's kind of always been Thrall again. I don't have a problem with that, but he's for the most part sort of taking a little bit of a back seat to Durotan. So
okay.
Right now, you know, I mean, there's obviously the relationship there. We're going to want to find out at some point, you know, Thrall, are you actually going to, at this point in the game, Durotan, it doesn't appear to me he knows. Thrall's kind of keeping it on the DL, like, he hasn't revealed that, by the way, I'm your son just from the future.
Unlike Garrosh, right?
Right, yeah, exactly. And I don't know, I mean, it'll be interesting to see how that plays out, for sure. But at least at this stage in the game, I don't see. We've already, you know, taken care of Garrosh, and so they're kind of just placeholders in the garrison right now, for lack of a better word. That's literally what they are. So, you know, we're just kind of picking away at the storyline as it happens. No real Rel kind of character driving a lot of that. At least not that I've seen. It's a little bit of here, a little bit there, that she's kind of shifting it around to various people. There's a troll. Shadowhunter sends you out to do a few things, and troll sends you out to do a few things. There's a warden equivalent. It's not Maiev, but it's someone else. She sends you out to do a few things, this and that. So yeah, I guess we'll just have to kind of sit back and wait and see. I mean, I'm sure Thrall will find a way to come back into the limelight again.
Oh, doubtlessly.
Because he's the Mary Sue, right?
Exactly. And I love that you're using that term. For those of my listeners, the six of them that exist, do you want to tell people what Mary Sue is?
If I understand the term correctly, a character that can do no wrong, right? Can no harm can ever come of them. Any transgressions that, you know, that are bestowed upon them, they're absolved, right? They're just, and I don't see him like that. Like, he's made mistakes. This is the other thing that's bothered me. During the end of Mists of Pandaria, there was a lot of this crap in the social media, in particular from the community, where the Alliance was just very, very vicious in the, oh, you see what's happened to you now, Horde? This is what happens. Yeah, your final raid's happening right in your city. Yeah, we're tearing it all down. You've been the bad guy all along, and you know, you're gonna pay for it. And like, claiming that we're the Horde, the truly like honorable ones in the Horde, were following Garrosh. We never followed Garrosh. Anybody that legitimately considered themselves a Horde player, they knew Garrosh was a piece of shit. He had to come down off that throne. We weren't following him at all. And Thrall, you know, he acknowledged that. At the end, he admitted, yeah, this was a mistake. I made a bad judgment call. It's just like guild leaders and just like life. Leaders make bad decisions. Can they own up to them? I guess, you know, in some cases they do. I think Thrall did. I think he owned up to it. You know, he admitted it, that it was a bad decision. He just, you know, that was what it was. And that's the way the story played out. You know, he had those were his only options. I think he probably would have gone the Karen route had Karen not been fucking accidentally killed. It wasn't an accident. It was on purpose, you know, the Grim
accidentally
Totem.
Accidentally on purpose,
you know,
right.
Yeah, right. So, you know, it's a complex mosaic of stories that have to be followed in order to understand, but a lot of people don't care about that. They are Alliance. They see Horde as the bad guys. End of discussion. So, you know, that's Serenity now, I guess.
To be fair, I think that anytime you have a sort of a segment of a bigger population that can still be branded as that larger population, I think that the subtleties are lost on people. Yeah. And so I can understand why some Alliance or Horde or anyone morons might not really see the difference between, you know, the Garrosh Horde and then I guess the true Horde, the honorable Horde. I can see honor in the Horde, even though I can't stand them. But I mean, like that comes from years of I guess doing stuff alongside them. You eat like separately, but alongside them at the same time, you know, going through Molten Core at the same time as people, you know, seeing people on the, you know, on the chains going down, you know, down towards Molten Core in that section of Blackrock Mountain. So, you know, it's just like, I've always felt a sort of a not a kinship exactly, but a sort of, okay, they're like our alter egos, you know,
and mutual respect.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think a lot of people lack that these days.
Oh, there's good. There's noble people on both sides of in the characterization of both the Alliance and the Horde. There are good people. There are bad people. You know, it's just my opinion that there's more of them on the Alliance. The bad people.
All right, that's fair.
It happens. You know, it's out there now.
Let's see. In terms of WoW these days, let's talk a little bit about what you're doing in the game right now. Without asking you to spoil anything that you've got, you know, planned to reveal to us in your blog, what are you doing these days in the game?
Oh boy, my gaming days in WoW are very, very dull. It's a lot of garrison work. It's a lot of leveling alts, particularly if I'm trying to help my daughter. She is very altaholic, lots and lots of characters constantly. She loves leveling, so I help her where I can, although she favors the Alliance, which isn't necessarily something that I agree with, but I do what I can. I have a couple of Alliance characters that I can help her with here and there. Well, she's rolling alts. My son does a little bit of raiding, so I'll help him in that respect. But, you know, right now it's a little bit of garrison work. You know, I'll pop into LFR here and there. I'm taking it much, much more laid back than I did in my former raiding days. So it's just a kind of a, you know, I'll continue to check in. I'll be checking in on and off for quite a while. I think it'll be a long, long time before I ever pull the plug entirely. But certainly it is nowhere near, my involvement in the game is nowhere near as much as it was for the 8 years that I ran the guild.
I totally understand that. And, yep. And speaking as a former guild master as well, dull is a great word for your current play experience. Like it really is. It's nothing compared to what it used to be. Like it used to be all kinds of stuff going on, many balls to juggle, many, many things to do, many people to speak with. And now it's just like, oh, I guess I'm going to do my garrisons now.
Okay. I know. Well, and I used to joke with my kids a lot during Mists of Pandaria was a lot of that too, specifically around the whole farm, right? Mm. And just the whole Farmville aspect, I just thought, oh my God, is this what we've become? You know, is this it? I slayed internet dragons at one point with 39 other people. It took weeks and weeks. Now I got some carrots.
And now literally you're out to pasture. Carrots.
I have carrots. There's a lot of pandas here. And let me be perfectly clear. I'm going on the record with this too. I'm pro panda all the way. I mean, I knew way back again, lore wise, and with Samwise's just gorgeous, wonderful artwork. I've always loved Samwise as the art, you know, senior level art guy there at Blizzard. Is that early little panda sketch? I was on board right from day one. And I knew they were coming. I knew it was only a matter of time. And I knew that when they would eventually come, that it would be a lot of fun. And I always thought that the Pender was quite enjoyable. But of course, again, that was also post-raiding days. So that was just purely from a uber ultra casual perspective. I'm just kind of exploring the world and checking things out. And I love the Panda. I love the Pandaren. And I think that, again, a lot of the players that are, you know, maybe not quite as old as us, well played as us, remember Kung Fu Panda when it made the rounds, maybe are very quick to judge on that, you know, and checked out of the game or just, you know, poo-pooed it quickly just because of that. The real players, they knew pandas were well on their way long before Jack Black ever voiced one in a movie.
Oh man, I claim ignorance. I had no idea pandas were a thing in WoW until they registered the trademark of the name Mists of Pandaria and people started speculating and I'm like, are you kidding me? What the F? They're pandas?
Yeah.
Pandas
are
coming to WoW?
Oh my god, Chen Stormstout.
Yeah.
Navigating him through the RTS way back when. Oh yeah, and when he was in the game too, I just knew, oh my god, this is just gonna be awesome when they get this going. It happened.
It did, and I'm still not thrilled, but hey, that's okay. I'm clearly not the target audience any longer, and that's fine, I guess.
Right. Sure.
Oh man. Okay, so tell me a little bit about your guild and perhaps your current position in the guild as opposed to your original position.
Ascendants of Draenor. So I created the guild just a couple of days after the game started in November of 2004, and guild leader. I mean, I was guild leader then, I'm guild leader now. I think it's really the only thing that's changed is the capacity to which I manage, which was back, you know, today it's I log on, I check who's online, what's going on, running some dungeons, checking garrisons, you know, whatever. It's real just social more than anything else, just chillaxing. And Friday nights they try to put together a flex and with moderate success. But, you know, a couple of years ago, quite a bit more than that. I mean, for anyone who spent any amount of time reading the blog, we're talking about the full gamut here, facilitating guild merges, growing the roster, full-on micromanagement of the rotations, setting a schedule, adhering to it, constructing raiding rules, loot rules, enforcing them, dealing with promotions, dealing with demotions, trying to motivate people, trying to encourage them. It was a lot of people management. It was almost nearly all of it by the end was people management.
I hear that.
Dealing with, you know, this is just the thing that continues to boggle my mind. By default, we're dealing with, you know, and this isn't everyone, obviously, but a good majority of people that choose this as their hobby go this way because of a number of, you know, variables in their life that play out the same way. They're socially awkward. They don't do well with groups. They don't do well in public. They're outcasts, shunned. I wasn't good with sports. I wasn't popular in school. I was in the computer club, not the rugby team, you know, up in my Canadian high school there. So this is why I gravitated toward games, because I like gaming and was socially awkward and didn't fit in and, you know, didn't have the tools necessary to deal. So years later, now I'm guild leader of, you know, this huge, huge handful of varying degrees of personalities that all have similar things in common, all difficult personalities, many of them socially awkward, some of them with significant self-esteem issues, others with not self-esteem issues, but perhaps the other extreme, narcissistic personality disorders.
Oh, yes.
You know, this and that, and then trying to deal with them. Right? Keeping it all together, keeping them focused, aligned. Let's get things done. Let's not, you know, argue, make, you know, have petty fights about things like loot. Let's try to stay focused on the goal, right? The end goal. Let's get some progression done. Let's rise above, right? Let's try to carry ourselves a little bit, you know, higher than perhaps some of the other guilds. And Deathwing was especially egregious in this particular category, because it's a pit. I'm sorry to say it for every, I'm sorry to say for everybody, yeah, sorry, there's my Canadianism. Sorry for anyone that has spent any amount of time on Deathwing, or if it's their core server, and I'm faithful to Deathwing. We haven't left. I've never left. I've never transferred, even with the free transfers. But I'm not going to lie. I'm not going to mince words. Deathwing is a pit. It's an absolute hole of despair and sadness. It is rife with D-bags and PvPers and just awful, awful players. You know, the most surprising thing, I've learned a lot of surprising things for writing the blog these last couple of years, but one of the most surprising things is when I started to reveal early on in the story of the poaching that was going on, heavy poaching between my guild and others, particularly with Depraved and with Pretty Pink Ponies and with some of the other lesser, there wasn't really any poaching with Enigma, but it was certainly something that I had to keep, you know, front and center on my radar the entire time. But the thing that surprised me was the overwhelming response I got from readers that were saying, wow, this was going on your server? This kind of stuff would not fly at all on our server. Right, if anyone poached on our server, word would spread so quickly this person would be outcast and never again dealt with by any guild on our server. And I just, that was very surprising, and it impressed me. I mean, it's like, wow, that's really awesome to hear that. It just, it sucks that that is not the norm on Deathwing at all. It never was.
You know, I don't think it's the norm on all the servers for sure. I mean, aside from Deathwing, but because Elder Thalass was not that respectful either, I guess. Back in the early days, it was easier to be more respectful because there were fewer guilds, I think. And everybody was always looking for more people. So it was a smaller kind of community amongst the guild masters. And I know that when I think it was 8 of the like 12 people on my Karazhan team in this guild I was in called Skull were poached to go to Untouchables. Instantly, the Untouchables were just branded as D-bags, and nobody wanted anything to do with them, except for those who were, of course, now raiding with them, right? Yeah. And so they isolated themselves and all that, but, like, everyone else is just like, I don't want anything to do with you. You were in Untouchables. GTFO. And I'm like, I'm so glad to see other people and not just me holding a grudge. Cause like I was unfairly affected by that, but so were other people in other guilds. So it was nice to see that sort of banding together. But then by the time Burning Crusade rolled around, I know that I had people poached from me right out from under my nose. Nobody was, you know, no retribution from the community at all. Nothing like that. And that really made me sad.
It's awful.
You know, so I understand what you're going through, but I don't think that what you and I went through is altogether uncommon. I think a lot of people had to deal with poaching and that kind of, in my opinion, reprehensible behavior.
There's got to be some kind of common variable holding all those groups of D-bag servers together. I hate to say it, but my gut tells me it's the PvP realms. You know, the PvE realms, maybe there wasn't as much of that going on. But for the PvP realms that happen to have guilds on them that raided and raided competitively, I can't help but wonder if there was a lot more of that poaching going on. That, you know, the debaggery that we make mention of in our respective blogs. I don't know. It's a guess. There's no scientific proof behind it.
Interesting, because Deathwing's PvP, Elder Thalass is PvE, and I've also seen this over on Proudmoor, which is PvE. So I don't know that that's the driving factor, but certainly, certainly it's just, I think, more common than anyone really suspects. I think a lot of people feel isolated and feel like that happened to them and they were screwed over and, well, nobody else really knows what I'm going through. But you know what, people? You're not alone.
Yeah, it's a common thing. That was the other surprising thing I learned from the blog. So many commenters saying, oh my God, this is just, it's like you're telling my story.
Yeah.
Which, you know, makes me feel, well, good, obviously, because it's nice to hear that it wasn't just, this is one thing that kind of, when I first started thinking about writing the blog, I kind of hesitated with those sorts of concerns in mind. You know, boo-hoo, your guild fell apart. baby, who cares? Guilds rise and fall every day. You know, like the tides. What makes your story any different or special? And, you know, one of the things that encouraged me to move forward with the blog was just the fact that, you know, maybe there is some shared, you know, there's some shared stories there. Maybe that's why, or possibly how it could become successful, could become readable. People could relate to it. You know, I didn't really feel like my story was all that unique. I did feel like that there were other people, many, many other guilds rising and falling, but, you know, I didn't think that anyone was talking about it. And still to this day, I think it's very interesting. I mean, I've emailed you know this, I've emailed Maticus, I've asked a number of people, you know, on the side and said, why do you think that my blog is being read at all? Like, I'm still not really sure what's so interesting about it, because if everyone really did have similar experiences, why? You know, why? What makes mine so interesting? And, you know, Maddie himself said, I think it's just because no one else has really done what you're doing. No one's really taken everything that we normally as that wow community and kind of kept under wraps and brought it, floated it to the surface, particularly from a guild leader perspective. And I think that you'd agree with that. Maybe not. I don't know. You know, if I throw this out there, you let me know what you think. I think that it's generally a very conservative community from a sharing perspective. And the reminder of that I see all the time is whenever there are screenshots posted of raids, and you know, let me be frank, there's more than one reason to do what I'm about to say, but in many, many cases, names of characters are blacked out. Now, there just so happens to be unrelated to this conversation, there happens to be an issue right now going on right as we speak regarding raid progressions, world first servers and raids and the blacking out of names that hasn't been blacked out, and there's some little bit of controversy there. I'm not really talking about that and character account sharing between world first guilds. I'm talking about just, hey, here's a screenshot of us and here we are and we're in Azeroth or whatever and here we're waving to the camera, but your names are all blacked out. Well, okay. They're a character. So what? Why is it so important that you black out the name of your character? Why? Why is
that
it?
That is interesting.
Are you trying to preserve privacy? Is it something? Or is it a harassment issue, or is it just something that is? It's naturally like we're all just. This is the way we are. We just don't talk about this stuff. You know, I'd like to know what it is, because maybe perhaps it is harassment related. Could legitimately be all about, I don't want my character's name out there because people, you know, I'm actually a gal in real life and I really don't care about the, you know, the excess sexual harassment that's going to be sent my way. Maybe that's it. But can it all be related to that, or is there some other reason why every single screenshot, nearly every single screenshot I see, and this is wow, go to League of Legends, go to any other game, people's name, character names are being blacked out. Why? Why? Well, what's the big secret?
The way I've always approached things is that I am very, what's the word, protective, I guess, of my privacy. Anyone who knows me knows that, and I always have been. And so I know that I've taken measures, I guess, in the past, similar to that, just to protect my privacy. Like, I wasn't really forthcoming about what server I was always on, especially during Wrath of the Lich King, where I jumped around a couple places. But it was only when I came back to Elder Thalas for Cataclysm, where I was like, okay, I'm Kern, and I'm on Elder Thalas, and, you know, you can reach me here, because, hey, we're recruiting. So it was sort of a
good technique.
Exactly. It was something that I needed to do in order to make myself more accessible, in order to help out the guild. But if it were up to me, I would probably not be so vocal about that. And so when I'm taking screenshots of, you know, the entire guild, you know, with a kill shot, yes, I'm proud to have my name there. But otherwise, I'm sort of like, well, let's make sure that nobody really is too identifiable, just because of my own past experiences. I don't think that that's everybody's experience. Obviously, a lot of people don't care about any kind of privacy issues. You know, they've never had a reason to be concerned or what have you, and that's fine. I'm glad for them. But I do think that that there is a sizable chunk that is not really fearful, but concerned with privacy. I don't really understand the whole lack of sharing thing otherwise, although I have seen that in the sense that a lot of people get very defensive when you start asking the sort of deeper probing questions. And things like, you know, asking somebody for help is just sort of like, why are you asking somebody for help? Like, somebody you don't even know for help. Like, no. I know that Matt from his guild, Conquest, right? He would come to me every so often. We would have guild master conferences, sort of, where he'd bounce ideas off of me and I'd bounce ideas off of him. And we had a good time doing that, but like, it felt very hush hush backroom meeting, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And I'm like, why is there that sort of, I guess, mentality? Like, why is it not okay to ask somebody that you sort of kind of know for help? Or why is that frowned upon? I mean, nobody walks into the game on day one and instantly knows exactly what the game is all about. You know, we can all use help from everyone else.
Right, but I think perhaps part of it comes from that whole, you know, the culture, right? The community of the gamer, and the fact that they're already socially awkward, have been rejected by their peers, right, out in the real world, quote unquote. And so now any kind of reaching out for help is an admittance of, you know, failure, of defeat, of I don't know what I'm doing. And that, you know, maybe perhaps from a gaming perspective is a, oh, that's you know, fair game. You're fair game now. We're going to call you out on your shit, which gamers are prone to do. So maybe that is something related to it. Maybe that's, you know, part of it.
You know, I think that that's actually probably a really good guess. If I had to think about it, I think that that's probably part of it. And I've noticed that, you know, a lot of gamers, not to get all political about this sort of thing, but Gamergate and all of that jazz, I've seen a lot of, you know, vitriol being spewed by people who have been targeted, you know, in their past, and now they're retargeting their anger from having been victimized to, you know, the people in the Gamergate situation, you know, women and female gamers and that sort of thing, and all that jazz. So I always found it really I guess, strange that people who had been typically victimized, like nerds, geeks, etc., and I count myself as one of those, then so easily take the role of the bully and the intimidator, and then try to, you know, I guess, demonstrate their power upon someone that they view as weaker than them. So if that's the case, then I just find that, you know, God, don't, like, we've been on the receiving end. We should know better. We should be able to treat people with a little more compassion, but that does not appear to be occurring.
No, but what does appear to be occurring is, you know, it's kind of an enforcement of that vicious cycle, right? If all you ever knew is that you were bullied on the playground at school for your looks or your weight or whatever, and you were bullied to the degree where you eventually had to take another, you know, interest, another hobby, and then you start to encounter friction yourself. Well, if all you've ever experienced is bullying, what would you say would be the first way you start to treat those types of situations, those frictions, right? You know, you're not going to have many other tools to work with other than what you already have been exposed to.
That's true.
Same thing with domestic abuse, right? Same thing with alcoholism, same thing with all sorts of issues that have plagued humanity outside of gaming, right? If all you ever knew is hate and abuse and bullying, well, that doesn't actually surprise me that that's how they are then turning it back upon themselves here in you know, with things like Gamergate, you know?
Yeah, so no, absolutely. It's not that surprising. It's a cycle, and I hope that we all sort of can pull out of it. You know, I hate to see the greater geeky sort of community go down that route, and I'm hopeful that you know, we can sort of recognize what we're doing to various people and just stop it already. But anyway, that I've gone off on a tangent there.
Well, it's not a tangent. No, I think, yeah, it's a very important topic to bring up. I think, you know, it's going to need to be discussed at some point. And so, you know, that's how we're going to have to chip away at it a little bit at a time. But you're absolutely right. You know, I think in terms of gamer, being claiming and, you know, self-identifying as a gamer, there's going to have to be some real rational thought. And, you know, if humanity outside of gaming can start to recognize, you know, gay marriage and this and that has been and traditionally has been shit on for so many years, officially, like out in the real world, by, you know, laws, if we're going to only now start, you know, changing our tune and wising up and you know, smartening up, well, it's going to eventually have to happen to people in cultures like gamers as well, eventually. It's going to happen.
Yeah.
You know, over time. So we just got to chip away at it.
Yeah, and never really back down, despite the awful things that occur, like for Anita Sarkeesian and other such outspoken critics.
Just the stuff they have to deal with is just awful. You know, and I can't even imagine how they live and have to deal with that on a day-to-day basis. It sucks sometimes when I sit down to write my blog and think, oh my God, these issues are just so pale in comparison to other people's problems, you know, and so, but, you know, I try to stay on focused just on the story and try to deliver it as best I can. But, you know, when I set up DOD back then, I recognized it early on. I mean, Deathwing being a pit and gamers being what they are, and I knew that I wanted to do something different. I knew that it was going to be very easy to get into any guild on Deathwing where they didn't really give a shit about one another. They treated each other like shit. They ninja items, whatever. The idea was, we're going to try to take this up a notch. Let's see if we can be a little bit better to one another. I mean, hell, Blizzard themselves, right within the game itself, they're allowing us to report names for being inappropriate. If they're letting us do that, well, they clearly give a shit too. They care also about trying to cultivate a positive community. And so, you know, following that lead, I thought, well, I'm going to build this guild, and we're going to set the bar a little higher. We're going to treat each other with respect. We're even going to maybe treat strangers with respect and see how that works out. And, I think that's one of the narratives of the blog, is that was really ultimately my goal for much of my career as guild leader. And it worked out very well for many years. But I also think that it started to kind of fall apart at the seams near the end. It wasn't so much that my intentions had changed, because they certainly hadn't. I still desperately wanted to keep that, you know, mutually respectable, beneficial community flowing. What was happening was the support structure was coming out from underneath me. You know, I was having to change my rules on the fly, you know, backpedal on statements that I had made that we're never going to do this. Well, I guess we're doing it now because we have no choice.
Right.
This kind of stuff. And there's a lot of that. Hopefully, you know, for those that have been reading along the blog, there's a lot of that popping up in the narrative of part four. It's here is me attempting to continue to adhere to all of my initial ideals in the guild, and how I'm constantly thwarted by that. What with the changing landscape of the game, with Blizzard's point of view, and I mean, Blizzard themselves, they kind of took a little bit of a changed. They had a change of opinion in the game, and its intent and its audience, and I'm still a little on the fence as to who exactly was responsible. Because you always want that, don't you, Kern? You always want, at the end of the day, a little bit of closure so that you can go to sleep at night. You want to be able to put your finger on and say, this person was the one that made it all fall apart. You know, there was their horrible decisions. And, you know, I don't know if there is one with Blizzard, at least in terms of the direction that it changed with Cataclysm. I'm trying to be, you know, like the person that goes onto the forum and just rants and raves, and then eventually a Blizzard person comes in and says, you know, it sounds like you have some constructive criticism, but unfortunately, because your argument is phrased in such a way so it's so hateful, we can't really read it and consider it. So if you'd like to just come back and present it a little bit, you know, more calmly, more rationally, we would be glad to read it. I feel like that's my blog. I feel like I am the ranter that wants to pound the desk and just go to town on Blizzard, saying, you know, what were you thinking? What bureaucratic decision ultimately guided the direction of Cataclysm? Because it was foolish and short-sighted, and it was reprehensible. But I'm kind of not doing that just yet, right?
Right.
I'm stopping short of it and instead saying, here's what they've done. Here is how I'm adapting as best I can. Because remember, also, if you've read the blog, you'll know that for three quarters of it, I've been in pretty much support. I've been aligned with Blizzard all the way. They've made decisions in Vanilla and Burning Crusade and Wrath. I've supported them. They haven't been popular decisions, but I've rationalized it from the perspective of just a gamer, from a professional software developer myself, from a budding, you know, people manager, so to speak. So I'm trying to look at it from their decisions from a practical standpoint. And I'm not going to agree with everyone. If you know, if Dallin's, my longtime number two, was listening in and participating, he'd tell you right now the game stopped being fun at the end of Vanilla when they kill 40-man raids, because that's ultimately what his ultimate vision of the game was, right? 40-man epic. We're talking epic-sized raids that were extraordinarily exclusive and only catered to a very small public, which he thought was successful. It was successful because he thought it separated the wheat from the chaff. Right? It was very, very easy in Vanilla to cut out people that did not know what they were doing. You're spec'd the wrong way. You're not wearing the right gear. You're not doing things the way we need you to do them. You cannot be considered for this 40-man raid slot. We need 8 warriors for Noxramas, and you're not a warrior. That sort of thing. It was very, very easy for someone like Dallin's to separate, right, the casuals from the hardcores. And, it, you know, as time went on, I grew disillusioned with that black and white mentality. I really always felt that there should be an opportunity for people to raid. Right? Noxramas, traditional 40-man Noxramas, that wasn't an opportunity. That wasn't an option for many, many, many,
who
many
went
players.
In there? Like, I know 5 people who've been in there.
Exactly. You had to look around maybe and do a quick trash run. But I genuinely felt that this is not the right decision. We need to be able to give more people the chance. We've got to be able to give them the chance. And this is something I tried with my guild many times. I said that in our motto. I said, you know, I don't care what your level of experience is. We will give you a chance. And we're going to not just say, come on in, and we're, oh, look, you totally failed. You're wiping, you're dying on trash, yeah, you're out. We'll put the tools in your hands to improve. We're going to show you and customize your builds and your play. And I'll be sitting late night on vent with people remapping their keys to make it easier for them to play. I would put the tools in their hands. That was important. Goal of mine, and Blizzard was following along. They were doing that too. They were finding more ways to make the game approachable. They were lowering the bar, you know, bringing down the size from 40 to 25, and then again split it from 10, split it into 25 and 10 in Wrath, which I feel is still the pinnacle of World of Warcraft, where they were really trying to make it approachable. And you know, this is something that's always been very, very important to me. I've been very supportive of Blizzard. It wasn't until Cataclysm that they started to go down some strange, bizarre path. And I get it from a business perspective. I get it from a, we need to retain our subscribers. We need to keep money flowing in because it pays the bills. And, it, you know, it pays the checks for all of these other people. And remember also, Kern, I'm getting rambly now, I can tell. There are things that we will never be privy to, not until anyone at Blizzard is on their deathbed and decides to write a memoir, tell all memoir. There's plenty of things that go on behind the scenes at any business that the general public are never going to be privy to. Just like Blizzard fans don't get. Blizzard fans that are kids or young men and women that just are not in software development and don't understand software development life cycles or understand the resources that go into software development, just like that group of people will never know why. Why can't you just touch up Silvermoon? It's gonna. We need to maintain lore, Kern. We need to maintain lore. Why can't you just touch up Silvermoon? Because it's a resource allocation issue. There's men and women working day and night. They're jobs. You want to take those development hours out of new raids, new content that are going to, you know, lengthen this life of this game for a lore consistency change. So just like those people are never ever going to understand a software development life cycle and know how much time and effort that goes into an armor modeling change or an animation change or a raid.
By the way, also, I just want to say, speaking of that, I'm very, very happy with the changes that they've made to the male Night Elf run. I mean, I don't think it's 100% the way I'd like it, but it is so much better than bouncing around like a freaking panda. I'm very pleased, and I really appreciate the hard work that they've put into that.
Yeah, they really have done a great job on all those models. I especially like the Blood Elf female. I think she's just got casting bitch face all over it. But
anyway, go on.
Yeah, but anyway, but just like those people that don't, like, why can't I get my art? You know, why? You know, they're saying it right now. I just logged into my guild earlier today, and they're like, I don't know why the selfie camera was added. I don't know why the jukebox was added. This doesn't appeal to me. Okay, but it's new content. It appeals to a broad range of people. There are a group of people that are never going to understand software development life cycles, and likewise, Kern, there are never going to be people that understand the complexities of the bureaucratic nature of corporations, of businesses, and what ultimately drive these decisions. And I think, this is my opinion again, right? Because, of course, some of these things we're never going to know. It is my opinion that Blizzard genuinely has our best interests at heart. They genuinely do want to make very, very professional level fun games, and I think their heart is in the right decision with a lot of the decisions that they make, right, with regarding all of their games. But I do also feel that there will always be an overarching agenda that does not apply specifically to Blizzard, but to businesses in corporate America where they need to pay the bills. They need to extend their earnings. They need to broaden their profit margin. They need to, for all we know, Kern, for all we know, the decisions of Cataclysm could be related to a series of events that unfolded wherein the upper ranks of Blizzard said, you know, we're still partially hanging under the umbrella of Vivendi. This isn't working out well for us long term. We need to do what we can to lower our costs but increase our profits for a short burst of time so that we can earn enough to buy ourselves out from Vivendi, which, of course, as you know, they eventually did.
Right.
For all we know, one of the broad strategies was we need to roll out an expansion where the costs are significantly low. So we're going to be reusing a lot of content. We're going to have to change staff around, keep staff limited. We're going, you know what I mean? So we're reusing the existing world as a Roth, but it's, you know, it's being re-art. A lot of artwork is being done and quests are being done. But, okay, Zul Grub and Zul Aman were also featured very heavily in Cataclysm, two raids that already existed. Okay, so you're
and
starting
I
to follow along
raids.
With me, right? They've, you know, think about it. Here's another piece of interesting tidbit. People always love Old War. The Raiders always reflect back on Old War. Love Old War. Those are got Old War. Everything's Old War. Old War. Old War. And Ghostcrawler went on the record many times and said, you know, we agree too. We love Old War. We thought it was great. But the 10 and 25 thing did tax us developmentally. You know, from a resource allocation perspective, the design of Wrath of the Lich King, in which we had to design and develop and implement two full different sets of art and gear for the 10 and the 25 is extraordinarily taxing. That may have been another thing that was on the chopping block. You're going to have to just make art and rewards work across the board. And for all we know, you know, there was a committee meeting and a decision made, look, if we're going to make this happen, you know, let's just solve a bunch of problems at once. Let's combine the raids, combine the gear, combine the rewards. We're going to keep our development costs low for the most part and be able to deliver a reasonably adequate 5-level expansion while we, you know, try to increase our margin and get ourselves out from under the Vivendi umbrella. This is all speculation and theory. I have no grounds to back any of this up. But for all we know, that or any number of very, very, you know, significant business level decisions were at the base of Cataclysm. And it sucks if that's the case, but it had very lasting effects on the community, on the players, and on me and my guild, and I think many, many 25-man guilds felt that. And, you know, I think Blizzard has owned up to a number of those so far. You know, I think that Watcher did a very, very good job a few months ago when he did a kind of, he drafted up a series of blog posts that were a reflection, like a look back at here's the history of raiding, which was wonderful. Kind of a here's where we started with vanilla, and then we went to BC, and we thought we needed to change these things, and then we went to Wrath, and we felt we had to go this direction, and then we did Cataclysm, and there were some issues with that. And I thought he did a very, very good job. Blizzard, I think, is one of the few corporations that does a good job of owning their mistakes, and they issue legitimate apologies. You know, this is something I tried to make mention of this in the blog when servers were down and people were gamers, you know, just flipping out, smashing keyboards like they're known to do. I was known to do. You know, there was Mike Morheim right up there, you know, taking the brunt of it. We're going to, you know, this is us. We're going to own this. It wasn't anyone else. You know, we're going to give you guys a kickback. We're going to give you a break on your subscription. We were doing everything we can. I feel very strongly they have always had our best interests at heart. Just, you know, be smart about it, World of Warcraft fan base. You know, they're also a business. you know, they're a business. They're going to make decisions that I think are also aligned in their own best interests. I think that's also
of course. Something
that is, they're always, yeah, it would be foolish to think otherwise. I'm not going to sit here and claim, you only make decisions because you want to steal our money, which I think a lot of gamers do that. This is bullshit. You could buy mounts now. Okay, whatever, you know, fine. I get it. But that's not what I'm claiming here. I'm just claiming that there is, I think, a lot of rationale goes it from a business perspective on their decision making. It's important to keep that. Don't throw them under the bus because of it, but definitely keep that in mind when considering why things are going certain ways.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that you raise a lot of interesting points in the sense that we don't always know what's going on. We will never know what's going on. We will never know exactly why, you know, they made those decisions for Cataclysm, for Mists of Pandaria, for Draenor now. We don't know what the deal is. And even if people have addressed it, we don't actually know that that's, you know, the full story. And working where I do now, we're a small company that does a SaaS product, a software as a service. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, like, I know what my developers are doing and I know how my clients are not happy. And I know all this sort of, you know, stuff. Like, I have to placate the clients while still reporting things to the developers. And I'm like, yeah, that's going to be a while before it's fixed. But thank you for bringing it to my attention. And so, like, I understand that whole sort of cycle of development thing, not as well as obviously a developer does, like yourself. But I'm getting to the point where I'm like the middleman between the devs and the clients. And that is not a fun place to be. So all those people who actually talk to us from Blizzard, I'm really thankful to them for being so open and transparent, because God knows I'm not able to be that open and transparent with my clients. So I'm really glad that they are with us. And even if they're keeping stuff from us, as they probably are, you know, they're still way more transparent than most people are. So we got to be really thankful for that.
Easily the most communicative company in gaming today. I mean, nobody comes close. I mean, Riot is starting to get there, but anyone else? Oh God, no. I mean, it's night and day. I think the WoW community takes it for granted. I mean, there've been some serious improvements just even recently as to how, you know, the community managers keep people up to date with stuff, and Ghostcrawler really drove a lot of that. There was a big shift, but even pre-Ghostcrawler, even the days of Jeff Kaplan, God bless that man, to goalie, you know, he even back those days, you know, he was making posts on the forums. He was keeping people up to date. It was kind of, you know, a little bit like a traditional sort of elitist gaming troll fashion, but he was doing it, you know. I mean, and that was more than a lot of other game companies could say. A lot
Absolutely.
More. I definitely think that the gaming community, the WoW community, takes that for granted a lot.
I think that's the case, and I think it's because Blizzard has sort of set this new standard for communication, and people still are sort of clamoring for more. It's like, I just want to smack them. I'm like, do you not know what it was like, you know, in another game or way back in? They are too young.
They were in their diapers. They were too young. They were little kids.
It's a little disturbing.
It's hard to believe that it's been 10 years. But yeah, I mean, there's a generation of people who play WoW now. They have no idea what it was like in vanilla. I was just too young to know.
That's horrifying when I think about it that way. So thanks for making me feel really old.
Yeah, that's right. That's why I'm here.
And so episode 39 of the Curtain Cast comes to an end here. That's not the end of the sort of conversation that Hanzo and I had. I've got another 50-some minutes. So what we're going to do is I'm going to release the next bit next week as episode 40, and I may or may not have an episode 41 made up of this conversation as well. I need to see where a good cutoff point is. I was looking for a good cutoff point for this, and I thought, oh, you know, an hour is probably a bit much. Maybe I should stop at about the 45-minute mark, but that's where things got really interesting. Not that they weren't interesting before, but they got super interesting around the 45-minute mark, where we started talking about you know, treating people with respect and bullying, and then, you know, treating people the way that you'd like to be treated yourself. And then we segued and tangented our way over into Blizzard and, you know, how we don't really know what's going on when all of these decisions are being made. And then I decided that we would stop where I felt old, because, hey, why not? Anyway, thank you so much for listening to episode 39 of the Kerncast. As always, you can find me on Twitter at Kernmog. That's at KURNMOGH. You can find Hanzo on Twitter at Hanzo55. You can also read his blog at 8yearsinazeroth.blogspot.com. Those links will be in the show notes. Don't forget to check out my guide site at kern.info, my blog at kern.info/blog. And of course, this very podcast is at kern.info/podcast. Thanks so much, and we'll see you next week for yet another episode of the Kerncast. You've been listening to the Kerncast, a World of Warcraft podcast hosted by Kern, copyright 2015. Thank you so much for listening.